This is an MP3 audio clip from the weekly People First radio broadcast.
CHLY 101.7 FM, Vancouver Island. On the web, www.chly.ca.
A series of articles called Native Youth Speak Out is being presented at the TAI.ca. A year in the making, the new series was written by Jacqueline Wind, who is a writer, photographer, and broadcaster from Tofino on Vancouver Island. Jacqueline spoke with 14 First Nations teenagers from various corners of British Columbia, providing an opportunity for them to share their views on school, alcohol and drugs, family, culture, and language. Jacqueline Wynn joins us on the phone today from Vancouver. Welcome to People First Radio, Jacqueline.
Hello.
You said that you are constantly surprised at how little Canadians know what the daily lives of many First Nations people are like. You also admit that you didn't know much about Native people until you were well into your 30s. Tell us more about the lack of understanding among Canadians.
Well, I think it's because, sadly, the Native people are gone from some of the major areas of Canada where a lot of Canadians live. I grew up in Ontario, in the suburbs of Toronto, in Mississauga. And I honestly, I didn't lay eyes on a Native person until I was in my 20s, and I didn't speak to a Native person until I was in my 30s out here on the West Coast. And suddenly, I think for a lot of us, we learn about Native people in school, of the people who previously inhabited Canada, and there are only some of us who are fortunate enough to live in the areas where Native people still live today and get to befriend them and find out about their history and their present.
How did you become more understanding of First Nations people? Was it just by befriending them, as you just mentioned?
Yeah, first by making some Native friends, and then I actually went out with a Native guy for several years. And so once you're in that kind of very close relationship, you find out a lot of things that don't get talked about. You know, once you're having those sort of more intimate conversations of what are the pains of the past, and you start finding out things that have happened in the family history, and then finding out that's not... You know, these stories from this one person's family are not atypical of other people's experience. And a lot of Native people are really open to talking about things once you develop that friendship and trust. They're really open to talking about things that I think in our culture we tend to keep these dark secrets that you wouldn't tell people about things that have happened in your family. But they're, a lot of them are quite open about talking about things.
You introduce your series of articles by reviewing some of the statistics of the nameless and faceless, quote-unquote, Aboriginal youth that we've become acquainted with through the media over the years. You go on to say that Native youth themselves are tired of hearing these dire statistics. How did that dynamic inform and guide your research?
Well, I think in a way that dynamic kind of informed my actual proposal to do the articles in the first place, because I have this long-standing relationship with several of the communities out where I live on the West Coast. And, you know, you hang around your friends' houses there and you get to know everyone from all the generations, the grandparents and great-grandparents and the little kids. And it's more what caused me to pitch this article series to the TAI and for that fellowship. Just to get people to hear when you hear these facts being presented in the media, but I know that there's a human story behind them, and that I feel like the story is not getting out. You hear these numbers and people go, well, why don't they get their lives together, or why didn't someone just start a program? And you realize things are not that easy. It's a little bit more complicated.
You grouped your articles around the topics of school, alcohol and drugs, family, culture and language. Where did those topics come from?
Now, I have to think back, because it's well over a year ago that I started structuring the articles, but I had actually an original list with something like 14 topics that I had to narrow down of what are the main issues to talk about. So I had this list of, I think it was 14, it was something like 14. And then once I started doing the interviews, and you know, all the kids talked about all the different things. It wasn't like I would say to one person, well, you talk to me about addiction, you talk to me about whether school matters. All the kids talked about all sorts of things. And then as a writer, you have to start defining and make a story out of it. And so those were some of the themes that came up most of all. And especially the theme of school really interested me, because I know in a lot of parts of our province, there is a low graduation rate from high school for Native people. And I really wondered, How much is that because of their traditional education, which their traditional education would be young people hanging around with their grandparents learning how to collect cedar bark and learning how to carve canoes and learning how to collect foods, is what their traditional education used to be. So I was wondering, how much is it because they just don't value what we see in our culture as education? If you go to this building where someone stands in the front of a room and teaches you stuff, or how much is it that they do value that education, but they just don't, there are other reasons that they're not necessarily succeeding in it. And it turns out the majority of them do value that schooling education, that our sort of modern world schooling education.
You write that it's clear from all 14 kids that you spoke with, going on this school topic here, that they considered finishing high school to be very important. What did you learn about bullying and Native youth?
Well, one of the things that surprised me, as I was, both to me, the bullying and the racism kind of go together, and to find out, you know, how much is racism a factor in their lives, and how much is racism possibly a reason that they don't succeed as much in the school system because they feel kind of shut out by the other kids. And one thing that really surprised me is that a lot of the bullying is not actually racism-based. A lot of the kids said they don't even feel like they're experiencing racism in the school system, that a lot of the bullying is coming from other kids in their own culture, which seems to stem back more to just family issues and things that are going on at home, which makes kids act out at school if they've got issues of violence or just not being treated, you know, fully the way kids should be treated at home, makes them act out at school more and makes them tend to pick on other kids. So that's a lot of the bullying is within their own cultural group. It's not racism. At least, you know, I only talked to 14 kids, which province-wide is, I'm not saying the representative kids of all across the province, but that's what I heard from the 14 kids that I was talking to.
You're listening to People First Radio. I'm Kevin. I'm here with Ashta today. Current statistics about Native youth are alarming, and they've been in the news for years, largely nameless and faceless. Vancouver Island writer Jacqueline Wind has completed a six-part series of articles which let First Nations kids speak about their lives, about school, alcohol and drugs, family, culture, and language. The series can be found online at thetie.ca. We're joined on the phone today by Jacqueline Wind.
You explored issues related to alcohol and drug use among First Nations youth, and you draw some parallels and some differences between Native and non-Native youth. Tell us more about that.
Honestly, I can't remember the actual numbers off the top of my head now as we're speaking, but it turns out when you actually look at the statistics of teenage alcohol use or marijuana use, it's not hugely different from what on the surveys, what non-Native kids report to what Native kids report. But I think there are issues of what Native kids see when, for the ones at least living in their own Native communities, which are usually reserves, of what they see when they go back home in their community. They see a lot more drug use and alcohol around them than most non-Native kids would see. So it becomes a little bit more of a normal day-to-day thing that they see, that it might not so much be a stage they grow out of.
In writing about youth and family, you speak about the influences of poverty and about children being removed from their homes. What did you hear about this from the Native youth that you interviewed?
This is a huge issue, and it's interesting of some of the government studies that are recognizing this, of what our cultural, like a Western cultural concept of what's a safe and nurturing environment for a child compared to what Native community values are. In Native communities, it's extremely strong value that families stick together and children stay with their families. So even if there is some dysfunction in the family where authorities might say, oh, you know, there's some neglect going on or some abuse going on here, let's get that kid out of there, it's not necessarily like what they're saying, even in the studies and the government recommendations, are that it's not necessarily the best thing to just get a child out of there, even if there are some unsafe elements, that the damage that is caused by removing a child from their family is very, very deep. And there is a girl named Belinda Lucas that I spoke to in Port Alberni, a very intelligent girl. She was 17 when I spoke to her. She's, I think, 18 or turning 19 now. And she was removed for a total of several years of her life before the age of 8, that she grew up in foster families. And it affected her in school so much because she just missed her parents so terribly, even though her home life wasn't perfect. They were her parents, and she loved them, and she missed them, that she just clammed up in school. She wouldn't talk, and the teachers would get angry at her for not talking. They didn't really know how to deal with her or what was wrong with her or how to draw her out, and she just completely holed up and didn't succeed in school for that. And she, fortunately, she's a really strong, very impressive young woman who's turned her life around. But, you know, I think a lot of kids with that kind of rough start don't necessarily turn their lives around. It affects, you know, it would affect any child deeply to be removed from their parents, but especially in a culture that values family relationships and extended family relationships. You know, one thing that I really notice about Native families, like, that, you know, it's easy to say in any culture, well, of course we all value our families, but I notice, this is my own observation, is that Native people tend not to move away from home much more strongly than, for example, I grew up in Ontario, and then I lived in California, and then Australia, and now here in BC. In our culture, it's really normal. You move around to go to school or for your work, and Native people in general, not everyone, but in general, are much more tied to their place and to their family, and they have a much tougher time if they move away. They really miss their home and their community a lot more, whereas our community tends to break these ties much more.
Jacqueline, one thing that you state about the consequences of removal of children from their families is that that removal and the consequences are felt by our entire society. What do you mean by that in a broader sense?
Well, it's just when kids have a rough start to life because of, you know, being removed is just one of the many factors there. In a way, we all end up paying for it, because if kids end up not finishing school and maybe veering towards crime or maybe just going on unemployment, that affects all of us, our communities, as both as individuals, of just part of society, as well as taxpayers. So the more, you know, for any youth of any culture, and any race here in Canada, that the healthier start that they get to their lives, the better they're likely to end up being as adults, as far as working, productive adults who don't end up basically being a drain on social systems, end up being productive and happy members of society. That benefits everyone. So if we need to put more resources into children, and now I'm talking about, like I said, of any culture or any ethnic group, I really believe that putting resources into children pays off, you know, many, many times over in the long term. Even if it seems like expensive programs now, it really pays off in the future to have healthy, productive, and happy adults in our society.
Now, Jacqueline, we have just a moment left. Is there anything else you'd like to add to our conversation?
Well, I just would really like to acknowledge the TAI for the fellowship that allowed me to do this work. That was a $5,000 grant. And that's, you know, it's almost unheard of in today's journalistic climate where people are in for sound bites and budget. Yeah, and I couldn't have done this kind of reporting on a budget of a few hundred dollars. It was multiple trips to remote communities up north, to the city, and repeated visits. You know, you don't have these kind of interviews with young people in 30 seconds or even in one visit. You need multiple visits to gain confidence and continue the conversation. So I really want to acknowledge the TAI for the kind of reporting that they permit by having these grants. And they've got their next round of grants is open right now, actually, for other people who want to apply for them.
Thanks very much for taking the time to join us today.
Thank you very much for letting me talk about this.
All the best, Jacqueline.
All right, thanks. Take care. Bye.
Jacqueline Wind is a writer, photographer, and broadcaster from Tofino, British Columbia. Her series, Native Youth Speak Out, can be found at thetai.ca. Jacqueline is also the co-author of First Nations and the Pacific Northwest, Change and Tradition. You can find Jacqueline online at jacquelinewind.com, and that's W-I-N-D-H.
People First Radio is an initiative of Columbian Centre Society in partnership with Radio Malaspina Society, CHLY, 101.7 FM, CHLY.ca, community radio from Nanaimo, British Columbia. The opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily of these organizations.